I drove Pharaoh's golden chariot up to the main gate of the city, and he stood tall on the footplate and shouted to the sentinels on the parapet above us, "Open the gates! Let me pass through! Who is it that demands entry to Thebes?" they called down. "I am Tamoza, ruler of the two kingdoms. Hail, Pharaoh! May you live forever!" The gates swung open, and Memnon touched my shoulder. "Drive through, Tata." I turned to face him. "Forgive me, Majesty. I have taken oath that I will not enter the city except at the side of my mistress, Queen Lostris. I must pass the reins to you." "Dismount," he ordered me gently. "Go, fetch your mistress, and make good your oath." He took the reins from my hand, and I climbed down into the dusty roadway. I watched him drive the golden chariot through the gateway, and the sound of cheering was like the thunder of waters in the cataracts at high flood. The people of Thebes greeted their king. I stood at the roadside as our depleted and battered army followed Pharaoh into the city. I realized what a bitter price we had paid for our victory. We would not be fit to pursue the Hyksos until we had rebuilt our army. By this time, King Salatus would be strong again, and his horses recovered from the Yellow Strangler. We had won the first battle, but I knew that many more lay ahead of us before the tyrant could be cast out of this very Egypt. I looked for Kratos as the Shilluk regiments marched past, but he was not there. Huey had a chariot and fresh horses for me. "I will ride with you, Taita," he offered, but I shook my head. "I will travel faster alone," I told him. "Go into the city and enjoy your triumph. 1,000 pretty maids are waiting to welcome you home." Before I took the south road, I drove first to the battlefield. The jackals and the hyena were already at the feast that we had set for them. Their growls and howls blended with the groans of the dying. The dead were piled like the flotsam on the river bank when the floodwaters recede. I drove the chariot through to where I had last seen Kratos. But this was the most gruesome corner of that awful field. The corpses were piled high as my chariot wheels. I saw his helmet lying in the dust, that blood had turned to thick mud. I dismounted and took it up. The crest was gone, and the helm was all dented and battered in by heavy blows. I threw the helmet aside and began to search for Kratos' body. I saw his leg protruding, like the branch of a giant acacia from beneath a pile of bodies. They were Shilluk and Hyksos lying together in the truce of death. I dragged them aside and found Kratos on his back. He was drenched in clotted black blood. His hair was matted with it, and his face was a black crusted mask. I knelt beside him and I whispered softly, "Must they all die? Everyone I truly love, must they all die?" I leaned forward and kissed his bloody lips. He sat up and stared at me. Then he grinned that wide, boyish grin of his. "By the plug of dried snot in Seth's left nostril, that was a real fight," he greeted me. "Kratos!" I stared at him with delight. "You will truly live forever." "Never doubt it for a moment, my lad. But right now I need a noggin." I ran to the chariot and fetched the wine flask. He held it at arm's length, and let the red wine squirt down his throat without swallowing. When the flask was empty, he threw it aside and belched. "That will do well enough for a start," he winked at me. "Now point me towards the nearest tavern, you old reprobate." Faster than any ship could sail against the current, I carried the news to Elephantine. I was one man in the chariot, and the horses ran lightly. I changed the teams at every relay station along the south road, and galloped on without a check. The grooms handed me a flask or a crust of cornbread and cheese as they changed the horses, and I never slept or even rested. During the night the stars and the moon revealed the path to me, and Horus guided my weary hands upon the traces, for though I ached in every limb, and I reeled on the footplate with fatigue, I met with no mishap. At each relay station and in each village along the way, I shouted the joyous news. "A victory! A mighty victory! Pharaoh has triumphed at Thebes. The Hyksos is cast down." "Praise to all the gods," they cheered me. "Egypt and Tamoza." I galloped on. and they still speak of my ride to this day along the South Road. They tell of the gaunt rider with wild bloodshot eyes, his robe thick with dust and the stains of dried blood, his long hair blowing in the wind, the harbinger of victory, bringing the news to Elephantine of the battle that set Egypt on the road to freedom. I drove from Thebes to Elephantine in 2 days and 2 nights, and when I reached the palace I barely had the strength left to stagger into the water garden where my mistress lay and throw myself down beside her couch. "Mistress," I croaked through cracked lips and a throat that was parched with dust, "Pharaoh has won a mighty victory. I have come to take you home." We sailed downriver to Thebes. The princesses were with me to keep their mother company and to cheer her. They sat with her on the open deck and sang to her. They rhymed and riddled and laughed, but there were tones of sadness in their laughter and deep concern in their eyes as they watched over my mistress. Queen Lostris was as frail as a wounded bird. There was no weight to her bones, and her flesh was as translucent as mother of pearl. I could lift and carry her as easily as I had done when she was 10 years of age. The powder of the sleeping flower was no longer able to still the pain that gnawed into her belly like some terrible clawed crab. I carried her to the bows of the galley, when at last the walls of Thebes opened to our view around the last bend in the river. With an arm around her thin shoulders I supported her, as we delighted together in all those long-remembered scenes, and lived again 1,000 joyous memories of our youth. But the effort tired her. When we docked below the palace of Memnon, half the populace of Thebes was waiting to welcome her. Pharaoh Tomoza stood at the head of this vast throng. When the litter-bearers carried her ashore, they cheered her. Although most of them had never laid eyes upon her, the legend of the compassionate queen had persisted during her long exile. Mothers lifted up their infants for her blessing, and they reached out to touch her hand as it trailed from the edge of the litter. "Pray to Hapi for us," they pleaded. "Pray for us, mother of Egypt." Pharaoh Tomoza walked beside her litter like the son of a commoner, and Tahuti and Bekata followed close behind. Both the princesses smiled brightly, though the tears jeweled their eyelids. Aten had prepared quarters for the queen. At the door I sent them all away, even the king. I laid her on the couch beneath the vine arbour on the terrace. From there she could look across the river to the shining walls of her beloved Thebes. When darkness fell, I carried her to her bedchamber. As she lay upon the linen sheets, she looked up at me. "Taita," she murmured, "one last time, will you work the mazes of Amun-Ra for me?" "Mistress, I can refuse you nothing." I bowed my head and went to fetch my medicine chest. I sat beside her bed, cross-legged upon the stone slabs, and she watched me prepare the herbs. I crushed them in the alabaster pestle and mortar and heated the water in the copper kettle. I raised the steaming cup and saluted her with it. "Thank you," she whispered, and I drained the cup. I closed my eyes and waited for the familiar but dreaded slide over the edge of reality into the world of dreams and visions. When I returned, the lamps were guttering and smoking in their brackets, and the palace was silent. There was no sound from the river or from the sleeping city on the far bank, only the sweet trill of a nightingale in the gardens, and the light breath of my mistress as she lay upon her silken pillow. I thought she was sleeping, but the moment I lifted my trembling hand to wipe the cool and nauseous sweat from my face, she opened her eyes. "Poor Taita, was it so bad?" "It had been worse than ever before. My head ached and my vision swam. I knew that I would never work the mazes again. This was the last time, and I had done it for her alone. I saw the vulture and the cobra stand on either side of the river, divided by the waters. I saw the waters rise and fall 100 seasons. I saw 100 sheaths of corn and 100 birds fly over the river. Below them I saw the dust of battle and the flash of swords. I saw the smoke of burning cities mingle with the dust. At last I saw the cobra and the vulture come together in congress. I saw them mating and entwined on a sheet of pure blue silk. There were blue banners on the city walls, and banners of blue flew on the temple pylons. I saw the blue pennants on the chariots that drove out across the world. I saw monuments so tall and mighty that they would stand for 10,000 years. I saw the peoples of 50 different nations bow down before them. I sighed and pressed my fingers into my temples to still the throbbing in my skull, and then I said, "That was all my vision." Neither of us spoke or moved for a long while thereafter. Then my mistress said quietly, 100 seasons must pass before the 2 kingdoms are united. 100 years of war and striving before the Hyksos are at last driven from the sacred soil of this very Egypt. It will be hard and bitter for my people to bear. But they will be united under the blue banner, and the kings of your line will conquer the world. All the nations of the world will pay homage to them, I interpreted the rest of my vision for her. With this, I am content. She sighed and fell asleep. I did not sleep, for I knew that she still needed me near her. She woke again in that hour before dawn, which is the darkest of the night. She cried out, "The pain, sweet Isis, the pain!" I mixed the red chepen for her. After a while, she said, "The pain has passed, but I am cold. Hold me, Taita. Warm me with your body." I took her in my arms and held her while she slept. She awoke once more as the first timid rays of dawn crept in through the doorway from the terrace. "I have loved only 2 men in my life," she murmured. "And you were one of those. Perhaps in the next life, the gods will treat our love more kindly." There was no reply I could give. She closed her eyes for the last time. She stole away quietly and left me. Her last breath was no louder than one before, but I felt the chill in her lips when I kissed them. "Goodbye, my mistress," I whispered. "Farewell, my heart." I have written these scrolls during the 70 days and nights of the royal embalming. They are my last tribute to my mistress. Before the undertakers took her away from me, I made the incision in her left flank as I had done for Tunnus. I opened her womb and took from it that terrible incubus that had killed her. It was a thing of flesh and blood, but it was not human. When I cast it into the fire, I cursed it, and I cursed the foul god Seth who had placed it in her. I have prepared 10 alabaster jars to hold these scrolls. I will leave them with her. I am painting all the murals of her tomb with my own hand. They are the finest I have ever created. Each stroke of my brush is an expression of my love. I wish that I could rest with her in this tomb, for I am sick and weary with grief. But I still have my 2 princesses and my king to care for. They need me.